Hello, Marquette basketball fans. Welcome to another edition of the Golden Break. I'm your host, Adam Woke. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, at the Golden Break. Shout out to the production staff. Took a big hit on that UConn game. The show pot is down. Dr. Keegan, Matt Mikus, Jeff Jubelina, this show does not go without them. Let's talk about that UConn game. We have to start with rebounding. I think it's the logical first place to begin. You know, I asked Jarrell McNeil, I said, you know, the rebounding is the Achilles heel of this team. And do you think we can overcome that issue and still make a run? And I thought it was interesting because what he said was, yes, unless there's a really a huge discrepancy. Well, tonight against UConn, there was a huge discrepancy. This team had 20 second chance points, 45% offensive rebound percentage. On those second chance field goal attempts, their field goal percentage was 82%. Marquette was keeping teams to 44% prior to this game. So when you have a discrepancy of that size, yeah, bet your ass you're going to lose a game like that. You know, you have to keep those numbers at least a little bit more under control. So I decided to go back and kind of really take a close look at the rebounding. Some of the things that really leaped out at me. The reality is that we don't have a lot of strength in our 4 and 5. Lewis really is kind of in between big. You know, I know we all talk here about the tree trunk thighs he has, but he's not a big physical specimen. I think he plays a physical game to the best that he can, but you know, when you're going against some of these guys in the Big East, there's guys who have 30, 40 pounds on you. It's the same thing with Kerr. It's the same thing with Oso. You know, we were literally just getting pushed around. Again, this was the same thing I talked about in the Providence game, and this is going to just be a weakness for this team. When you play dudes that are that big, I don't know what Shaka has up his sleeve to help us negate that, because we really do get tossed around. And the other problem that I saw on multiple occasions is something we've talked about a lot on the show that continues to hurt this team. When you double in the paint, which you had to do against Sanogu, I mean, what else were you going to do? I mean, the guy was getting whatever he wants. You have to double him. That leaves the weak side rebound open. And that bit us multiple times. We did not have a wing that came down and crashed. I think our wings are slow to do that sometimes. That's a weakness of theirs in rebounding. And it really hurt us again tonight. That problem gets compounded when you look at what happened with turnovers. I talked in podcasts in the past that one way we can negate some of those offensive rebounds is by creating additional possessions for ourselves on the defensive side when it comes to turnovers. Well, while we forced 14 turnovers, we only scored 13 points. That is not taking advantage of the possessions that your opponent is giving you. We simply got beat up the court by UConn. UConn beat us physically in almost every phase of this game. They beat us physically on the glass. They beat us physically by getting up the court in transition to stop our transition offense. The pitch ahead was negated in this game. And that brings us really to the next topic of things I wanted to talk about, and that's our transition defense, because we also got smoked on that side. UConn had 20 points in transition, and they shot 93% on fast break opportunities. You're not going to win a game like that. We were literally not stopping them. So let's look at a couple of the principal action when it comes to defense transition. Some things that you want to make sure you're doing as a team. One thing that's really important is stopping the ball. You want to stop the downhill action of the ball handler. That allows you to try to slow things down. That means you have to communicate up the court. There were possessions where we were not calling out the ball. This happened so often. Darryl Marcel was really bad in transition defense in this game. I mean, he was not getting in front of ball handlers. He wasn't being aggressive enough, especially against a guy like RJ Cole. Like, you have to get up in him in trans, because when he gets a full head of steam, like, there's just a point where there's nothing you could do about it. And we were not getting in front of him. We were not, they were out sprinting us on that side of the court. And when you don't stop the ball, you are also speeding up the rest of your defenders. You're trying to slow them down. You actually want to try to force them into a lateral pass, right? Negate the pitch ahead, stop the dribble, force a lateral pass. You could force one of those. You found yourself in a much better position. Another problem is that when you miss shots at the hoop, the other team is far more likely to get out in transition and score. In fact, shots that are taken at the hoop create the highest scoring output for transition offense. And there's a reason why. There's a couple of reasons. One, the shooter who is at the hoop, right? If he misses it at the hoop, he is now the furthest away from the other hoop. Whereas if I'm a three-point shooter and I shoot it, well, as the shooter, I'm still in play to get out and get a leaker, right? And we shot 52% at the basket. You compare that to UConn, who shot 83% at the basket. 52% at shots within 4 feet of the rim is 12% below the league average. You want to throw on top of that, shooting 37% from shots in the paint, which is 6% lower than the league average. When you're missing shots there, you're creating a lot of offense for your opponent on the other side. And that killed us. That's usually a place where we do a pretty good job of at least finishing better than that. And the majority of our shots came from that area. 30% of our shot load came from shots within 4 feet. 25% of our shots came from shots at the paint, right? The vast majority of our stuff was at the hoop, and we weren't completing. Another place where they were more physical than us. I felt like all of our shots, we were falling away. We were never going towards the hoop. We were being pushed off our path when we were attacking the lane. Whenever our guys, our bigs, had their backs to the basket, like, they weren't pushing. I couldn't believe how Lewis was getting pushed around. Like, Lewis could not get his way to the basket. They were keeping him far away from the hoop. And Lewis wasn't the only one struggling to finish at the hoop. Darryl Marcel was 1-for-5. It's shots in the paint. 0-for-2 was shots at the basket. Elliott, 3-for-5. Oso, 0-for-5. Tyler, 1-for-4. Kerr was 1-for-1. He didn't even get any more shots than that up. Cam Jones, 0-for-1. When you have your team missing shots within 4 feet at that kind of clip, not only does it suck the life out of you offensively, but man, it crushes you when they go and sprint up the court and get a basket. Another part of our transition defense that was an issue was sort of our floor balance. So what I mean by that is, you know, when we're getting up the court, the offense is sending guys down the left and right baseline. You've got a ball handler who's getting to the middle, and then you've got another guy who kind of shadows the ball handler, right? So usually that's a 4-on-3 when the offense is attacking like that. You know, the shadow is either going to tip the balance where there's sort of two guys on the left side of the court of the ball handler and one on the right, or there's two guys on the right side of the ball handler and one on the left. So what you want to do defensively is make sure your defense is as balanced as their offense. So if you're not getting back and you're not sprinting back, you can't tip the balance of the court. And if you look at how UConn was defending us because they were out sprinting us. They weren't allowing us to take advantage of tilting the court in trans. And so that made it even more difficult for us because trans is a place where we score a lot. In the end, I don't know that UConn exposed a weakness that we haven't seen in this Marquette team. The rebounding has always been an issue. But when the rebounding is a problem, we have to do a lot of other things right to make sure we can make up for it. And when you can't score at the basket, when you can't set strong screens, when your screens are not physical enough, when you're not initiating that contact, and when you're not sprinting back in trans, like I felt like the whole time it was like a UFC fight of a dude who was just taking punches every single round. He comes out the second or third. I mean, we kept taking the punches. I don't think we gave up. But we just looked like that team that took so many punches by the time it got to the fifth round. You're like, you're barely standing. They just beat us into submission, really. And that's going to happen on nights where just things don't go well. The next thing I want to talk about really actually kind of started from a tweet from Evan Mayakawa. If you're not following him, please make sure you are. Because he puts up some fantastic stats and analytics about all college basketball. And this week he put up two tweets that I think sparked a lot of conversation in the production team about Greg Elliott and what his role on this team should be. If you didn't see the tweet, I shared it out on our Twitter feed. The long and short of it is really our offense produces more with Elliott on the floor, on top of him in the second tweet showing that he's doing it against some of the best defenders in college basketball. Well, one, first of all, kudos to Elliott. I think to see his career here at Marquette get to this level says so much about him, especially with the way this year started for him. I think it could have been really easy for him to kind of just turn the page and, you know, just kind of say whatever to this college basketball year, but he didn't do that. He has come out and played fantastic basketball. But this sort of sparked a debate, like, should he get more minutes? What does more minutes for a guy like Greg Elliott mean for this team? If Greg Elliott is going to get more minutes, it's going to come from one of three players. It's either going to come from Omax, Daryl, or Tyler. So let's go through each one of those guys and talk about the advantages and disadvantages of having Elliott on the court over them. Let's start with Tyler because that's an easy one. I think there isn't an analytic in the world that isn't going to show you that this offense is better with Tyler Kolek on it. He does so much for this team. We've talked about it ad nauseum. So let's move on from that. Let's talk about Morsell. Now, this is a little bit more interesting because Morsell gets himself into offensive funks from time to time, which I do think now does sometimes affect him defensively. And so I do think there are times where it's nice to bring Elliott in off the bench when Morsell comes out flat to give him a minute, maybe spark the offense. But should he get more minutes than Morsell? Again, maybe in a game where, you know, Daryl's not in it, but that's not very often. On top of, he's giving up a lot of size. Morsell's 6'5", 205. You know, Elliott's 6'3", 188. Even Tyler is 6'3", 180. I mean, he's almost the same. I mean, I know Elliott's got length on him for sure, but you know, that's some size that, as we've talked about not being a big team, is hard to give up. And that sort of brings us to the same issue with Omax. I mean, Omax is 6'8", 220 to Greg Elliott's 6'3", 188. And when you look at rebounds, Omax is at 3.4 to Elliott's 1.7. Like, can we really afford to give up any more rebounds on this team than we already are? You know, I mean, Kerr's at 4.1 rebounds. Like, that's not really that good for his size. I think Lewis is at 7 or 8 rebounds a game. So when you put Elliott in, you do create more size issues for your team. And depending on the matchup, well, I mean, hell, let's look at the Big East. I mean, shit, it's hard, man. Some big dudes in the Big East. And it's really tough to find those minutes sometimes. And yes, maybe the offense produces better, but I think you take a defensive hit when you put him against starters in the Big East. Now, listen, I know you're going to say, okay, well, Adam, we saw the analytical that said that Elliott was also doing this against best defenders. He's scoring against those better defenders. But what does then the rebounding look like? And then what? There's defensive metrics that I think you can't account for when it talks about Omax's role on this team. One, if you're going to do the three-quarter court pressure to slow the ball up like we were doing against Villanova and we've been doing really against a lot of teams, there's a gigantic advantage to having Omax at the top of that rather than Elliott. Omax is a freak athlete. He can move from left to right. He's longer. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's taller. Like, he can play that part better. On top, making it more versatile for him to switch on screens, right? So, listen, I get it. I think the stats are awesome, and thank you again to Evan for sharing them. I think he brought up a really important conversation that we're all having in these circles, but I trust Shocker right now to know when to pull the trigger with this lineup. I don't think he's making a lot of mistakes in that area. I don't think that's why we lost this game against UConn. And in fact, if you remove the UConn game, whatever 7-8 games we won in the last 10, you know, really the two games that we lost came down to rebounding, and Elliott's not giving you that. So I think we got to stick with the rotations as we have them. But I'm taping this before Saturday's game. So let's see. Does my attitude change come Saturday? So it's Saturday, and my attitude has not changed when it comes to Elliott. But when it comes to this team, I'm really trying to keep a healthy perspective on what's going on out there. It's been really frustrating because the team we have seen in the last two games and the team we saw today against Butler is not the team that we have seen all year. So in trying to understand what is going on right now, we're going to look at this Butler game through the lens of the theory on why I think we have had such a bad week. I think that this team is gassed. I think that these guys are really worn down because the things that we're going to go through today and look at where I had issues with this team all revolve around energy. When you look at the minutes that these guys are playing this year from years past, let's look at a couple of things. Kerr, 17 minutes a game last year, 19 this year. Lewis, 21 minutes a game last year, 32 this year, on top of an insanely high usage rate, which is at the top end of the league. Oso, 7 minutes last year to 17 minutes this year, including playing 23 yesterday. Playing 23 today against Butler. Omax, 9 minutes last year to 20 this year. Now, Daryl Morsell and Tyler minutes are about the same this year as they were last year. But throw on top of that, Cam Jones, Stevie Mitchell, and David Joplin, who are coming from their senior year of high school, where they were not logging the minutes and games played that they are this year. Considering the system that Shaka runs and what this system demands from these guys from an energy standpoint, I think for me it's starting to become apparent that it's catching up with these guys. You know, when you go to the beginning of the year and you look at the full court pressure we were putting on, it was almost every possession. We were doing it constantly in the beginning of the year. We almost never took possessions off. And if you look over the last couple of weeks, the way we apply pressure has definitely changed. We do a little bit more of that three-quarter court pressure, to slow the ball, but we're still doing it, right? So all year, these guys have been running full court defensively. We run offensive action that literally demands sprinting to score. Whether you're a roller on a screen or you're an off the ball, one of the four men out on the arc and cutting to the hoop, this is a system that relies heavily on energy. And what I saw yesterday was a team that was making mistakes because of energy. Let's start with our press. I didn't even know what I was looking at in that Butler game some of the times. It looked like there were times where some of the guys thought we were in man. Some of the guys thought we were in a zone for our full court pressure. And it created all sorts of issues. I mean, in the first half, there was one that was really bad where literally they had a pit. Like, we were in our zone. They had a pitch ahead. And there was nobody standing around the Butler guy. He was at the hoop by himself throwing down a dunk. In the first half of that game, there were a couple times in trans that they beat us up the floor, and it looked like we didn't know where to be. Our guys were out of position on the court, and we weren't mentally in it. Now, when I'm talking about energy too with this team, I think it's important that, you know, we got to talk about the mental energy too. I mean, these guys have gone through a gauntlet, so not only are they physically tired, but they're also mentally taxed, I think, a little bit. And we saw so many mental errors in our full court pressure that we just aren't used to seeing. Let's next talk about the physicality part. I've already talked about the issues of physicality against UConn when it comes to rebounding. But now I want to talk a little bit about the physicality in our screening action. One, I think we're slipping too many screens, but when we are setting them, we're not initiating the contact. We're getting knocked off our feet. We're letting defenders get around us really easily. We're not sprinting to our spot. This is why sprinting to a spot is important. If I'm the big, if I'm Kerr, I'm Oso, and I'm setting a screen for TK or Daryl, you know, if I'm lollygagging from the block to the arc to set that screen, I'm giving the defense time to, one, call the screen out, but two, also be able to get myself in position to defend the screen. If I'm guarding the ball and my teammate yells at that the screen is coming and he says right or left, I can start to shift my hips a little bit. I can start to get myself in position to prepare for that screen coming. And because our guys are not sprinting to their spots, if you sprint from the block to the arc, you stop the other team's ability to prepare for the screen. And our offensive action has become so slow. Yesterday, we had 8 assists. We had 3 assists in the first half. That's not how this team plays. We live and die off of the assists. But because we can't get our screen and roll game going. And the other thing too is that teams have adjusted where the help isn't going to leave a shooter at the arc open. They would rather see us finish and try to finish at the hoop. But when the screening action isn't giving our ball handlers an edge, it makes it really hard to score at the hoop. We don't get an edge because we're not setting physical screens. When we're coming around, the help defense isn't coming off, so it's hard for us to set the shooters up. And we're not finishing. Like I said last game, when we saw how terrible our field goal percentage was at the hoop against UConn and how much that killed us. So when your screening and roll action isn't working, and also neither is your offensive trans, in which we scored 4 fast break points against Butler, 4 fast break points. That's awful. We're not sprinting up the court. Like our offensive transition, like just watch it. You all watched it, right? But just looking at it, you can see how slowed it is in comparison to how we've seen this team in the past. That's killing us. The pitch ahead has been taken away from us. I don't know if it's been taken away from us. It's hard for me to see that in film, but it's not happening as much as we used to. So that's slowing our ability to get up the court. That's been killing us. But last is defense. Like, I know that this was one of our statistically worst defensive performances. Well, it was really in the first half. In the second half, I thought we played much better defense, not our best defense of all that I've seen out of this team all year, but much better than the first half. But some of the problems that I'm seeing on defense is, one, our closeouts. This is the slowest closeouts I've ever seen. And because this team traps so often in the half court, it means that we always have to be ready for rotations. So when the ball gets out of the trap, the other three defenders have to be ready to sprint and cover the next guy. But our closeouts have been so piss poor. I mean, there were moments with Lewis where I was screaming at the TV yesterday to close out, watching some of those threes that they made. Butler also made some nice shots. Don't get me wrong. Butler made some crazy-ass shots, too. But there were times where I just like, why are you not sprinting at that shooter? Like, you compare that to the Villanova game this year where, I mean, the reason we won that Villanova game is because we didn't let anyone have an inch when it came to them trying to get shots up off at the arc. We closed out so hard in that Villanova game, and our energy was just down. We also need to take a look at our help defense. We have been doing such a bad job. We've been giving so many clear looks at the hoop because the help has not stepped over. Kerr has really disappeared. I mean, what his stat sheets has almost had zeros across it. I think he only ended up playing 13 minutes. I'm almost thinking maybe he's hurt and we don't know, or maybe he's something's nagging him, because this is two games in a row here where he has been really bad on both sides. His closeouts, he doesn't seem to have any pep in his step at all. I'm worried that maybe he's injured because he could not play in that game. In 13 minutes, that's not good. He's already not really a great rebounder, but neither is really Oso. And losing and only having one of those guys play well hurts us a lot. You know, we struggle with depth now in a way that I didn't think we would. And for me, really, the reason I say that we struggle with depth a little bit is because of the minutes that we're not getting from Stevie Mitchell and David Joplin. We're just not getting good minutes from them. In the 1 minute Joplin played, I think 2 minutes maybe he played in Butler, defensively, man, he's just lost. He got back cut really bad by one dude. He got beat off the dribble in the next possession in the few that he played. He's really a sunk cost on the defensive end, and that makes him really hard to play. And then you go on the flip side of it, Stevie really adds nothing to the offense. I mean, the second the ball's in his hand, he's passing it right away. He rarely shoots. He can't take anybody off the dribble. Now, he gives you good stuff on the defensive side. I think he can give you some good minutes over there. But when you have him and Omax on the floor at the same time on offense, I think that really limits what we can do. And not getting positive minutes from those guys, and Cam's been pretty bad too lately. He hasn't been playing his best. That really hurts this team. Because we need those minutes. We need to be able to give a blow to Tyler, to Lewis, to Marcel. We need to be able to give those guys a breather for us to play the style that Shaka needs us to play. Shaka needs them to play at that level. And to do that, he's going to have to start thinking about practice time. What does practice look like for the remainder of the year? Is he running these guys through 3-hour sessions? Is he going to start? I don't know what he's done. I don't know if he needs to, you know, back down. But we don't have, I think we've got 2 games every week all the way up until the end of the year. We've had 2 games every week all the way through January. It's really wears on you when you think about it. And you know where else we're seeing that problem is with the fouls. Oh, my God, the fouls. One, I don't know, Big East refs, man. I'm not blaming refs for the last 2 losses, but my God. I mean, that's 2 different games in the way those refs called it from UConn to Butler. In Butler, you can do anything. You can even look at a guy without them calling a foul. And, I mean, also, too, we were picking up a lot of ticky-tack stuff. You foul, when you're tired. That's an adage in basketball we've heard forever. You foul when you're tired. And in the last two games, we have been having so many ticky-tack fouls and a real decrease in deflections. I don't know what the deflections are. I don't know if there's a stat. I know that obviously they're keeping it. We got the guy on the board. And I feel like I hadn't seen it or I didn't catch a glimpse of it. But our deflections have to be really low in these last two games. Like the I have not seen the energy where we're jumping passing lanes. Like that was one of the best things I feel like we have done is the way we jump passing lanes. And that just hasn't been there. The next thing I want to talk about is the end of the game and the decision Shaka made with the last minute 15 left. Minute 15, we're down 71-79. Lewis comes down, hits a quick three. So at a minute four, we're down five. Timeouts called. Both teams in the bonus. Off the timeout, we call a full court man, and Oso is like standing there. I don't know what that was. He was all the way at the half court line, and they inbounded the ball pretty easily. And we decide not to foul. And in that possession, they hit a three on Oso, not sprinting to close out on a shooter. He made two big mistakes there in that possession. But, you know, we were talking about this, the production team and I, should we have fouled there? I went back to watch it again. And, you know, when the game is that close and it's 5 points before they hit that three, I think you're fouling. I think you play the rest of the game where you're fouling to get yourself back in. That's a great opportunity there to put the pressure on Butler, a team who for the year is shooting 69% from the line. In that game, they're only shooting 73%. I say make them beat you there because we really didn't foul in the end of the game until there was 20 seconds left and they were up way too much at that point. And there was nothing really we could do about it. I think we should have started fouling earlier. I think that was a bad decision by Shaka. I will say this. If there's one thing I have questions about when it comes to Shaka so far, it's some of the end-of-game decisions. Some of the inbounds plays we've seen, whether it was the game winner with Villanova, which really was like a fumble that Lewis picked up off a botched inbounds play. We've got the Creighton situation. I don't think that this here was a good management or I think a good strategy down the stretch. I think fouling might have been the better call. I don't know. Jury's still out. I'm not saying it's definitive. Those could have been moments. But if there's one thing I'm going to watch a little more closely with Shaka and something I want to see him do well, it's some of the end game situations or some of the decisions they're making. Rough week, guys. Rough week. But hey, we can bounce back. Something I know I've said multiple times, even during our winning streak. Young teams, roller coaster. It's going to be up and down. Let's stick with it. I don't think we need to get negative yet. I don't think we need to be overly worried. I think it's fair to be frustrated. But I do still have faith in this team to bounce back. We got another big week in front of us. We've got some interviews coming up. A surprise interview. Someone new that you haven't heard from yet. So we're looking forward to bring that to the greatest fans in college basketball. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great week. We out.